I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story.
So I can't speak on behalf of corrections, but what I can say is that from a health perspective, clearly we are concerned about prisons as a setting for spread.
Since the beginning of the pandemic, advocates and experts have warned governments about the dangers of COVID-19 infecting Australia's prisons.
We know that often we have vulnerable populations who are in prisons. We know the conditions in prisons often are conducive to the spread of communicable diseases generally.
Now, multiple prisons in New South Wales are seeing cases rise in the biggest COVID-19 outbreak so far for the prison population. It's also been revealed that at the start of this outbreak, vaccination rates in this population were incredibly low. So how is this outbreak being managed, and could it have been avoided? Today, inside the New South Wales COVID prison outbreak. It's Tuesday, the 14th of September.
Hello.
Hello, Danny. Can you hear me okay?
All right.
Great.
Well, my name's Danny Benson and I live at the entrance.
And tell me about you, a little bit more about yourself and your family.
Stephen, mm-hmm. He's my rock. I've been with him for 10 years, but I've known him for 25 years now. We grew up in the same area. We both had different relationships and had our children to other people, and then we decided to be together. Mm-hmm. Which is fantastic.
Danny's partner, Stephen Grant, is currently in Parklea Correctional Centre in northwest Sydney. But earlier this year, the couple were living on the central coast of New South Wales with two of their four kids. Stephen runs a cleaning business and is a carer for his father.
Stephen's dad has been diagnosed with a cancer of the spine.
You mentioned Stephen's been caring for him a bit. How long has that been happening?
About a year and a half now, full time. See, Stephen spends the day during with me here until Zach finishes work, does the cooking here. So he used to cook for both houses at once. And then you pack up everything and you take it over to Dad's place so he's got dinner too. And everything was fine until we found out some information one day about our son, Zach.
Zach is one of Danny's kids, but he and Stephen are close. In March, they found out that Zach has a serious lifelong condition, and this news sent Stephen into a spiral.
Stephen was really emotionally upset and angry at the time about Zach. The very next day was Stephen's birthday. Stephen decided to turn to drinking, and he got behind the wheel and he smashed his car. So he had a driving offence within 5 years. It was just on 4.5 years until it was clear, but then he reoffended and the magistrate had no choice but to give him some time in prison to hopefully teach him a lesson and give him some time to think about what was going on with his drinking because the magistrate blamed the drinking. It was all about drinking, but it wasn't. It was an emotional meltdown.
Stephen was sentenced to a short term, and when he entered Parklea in July this year, he wasn't vaccinated. As he's in his 40s, he was not eligible for the Otagi-recommended vaccine for his age group for most of the year.
Stephen used to call me 3 to 5 times a day and he always made sure he rang the children in the afternoons. About the 23rd of August, Stephen rang me like he normally does and he said, they've put a white sheet up around the cell. That cell is in lockdown. He's been tested for COVID. And I went, okay. And it was 2 cells away from me. And I went, be careful.
This news was particularly worrying for Danny, as Stephen has an underlying condition, diabetes, which means COVID-19 is more dangerous for him.
And he goes, I've got to walk past that cell to go to the fridge to get my insulin often at 7 o'clock at night. And I went, well, just be careful. On the Friday, he called me. He said to me, I've got a sore back. He goes, I've slept wrong, I've got a sore back. And I said, well, take it easy. He was going to ring that afternoon to speak to Zach like normal. He never called. On Sunday, his father, which is horrible, his father receives a phone call saying that Stephen's been tested positive for COVID. That was about it. It was crushing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was crushing to hear his dad's voice. Really crushing to hear it.
So Mick, tell us about this outbreak at Parklea Correctional Centre. When and how did it start?
There have been 43 new cases linked to Parklea Correctional Centre to 8 p.m. last night, meaning there are now 75 cases in total. All of the new cases are inmates.
So at the end of last month, we began hearing about an outbreak at Parklea Correctional Facility.
Michael McGowan is a reporter for Guardian Australia,
which is a privately run prison in Sydney's west. Then on 31 August...
The prison is not is in lockdown and appropriate public health action is occurring.
Kerry Chant, the New South Wales Chief Medical Officer, confirmed there was an outbreak at the prison and that it was now in lockdown. It's a privately run facility and the concern was that it's a remand prison, which means people are in custody before a trial or sentencing, and that means that there's a lot of people moving in and out of the jail and around the New South Wales correctional system.
Hmm. What happened next?
So there was a fear that the outbreak was going to spread to other prisons across the state. So after the outbreak was first discovered in Parklea, about 198 prisoners who had been transferred to 23 other jails across the state in the 2 weeks before the case were discovered were forced to isolate. And that prompted a lockdown of the entire New South Wales prison system.
When you say lockdown, what do you mean?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I guess when you think person thinks about prison, you think they're always in lockdown. But you had situations where inmates who were deemed to be, I guess, close contacts were not allowed to move out of their cells at all in some cases. And we heard reports from family members of some of those inmates who said that they understood that their loved ones hadn't been able to, you know, shower for a number of days. So the visitor system in the New South Wales prison system had already been changed with COVID and with this outbreak at the moment, you know, face-to-face visitations had been replaced by FaceTimes and audio-visual links. Those were shut down, basically.
I mean, locking down and shutting off contact to families is a pretty drastic move with big impacts on well-being for a lot of people. Was this effective in limiting spread? I mean, what are the numbers like in Parklea and in other prisons as well?
So by last week, there were more than 150 COVID-positive inmates across the entire correctional system, and of those, about a quarter were Indigenous. We do know that the bulk of the cases are inside Parklea, although there have been cases of staff being infected in Bathurst and also a few cases in Broken Hill in Far West New South Wales, though they appear to be separate outbreaks. There's also another smaller outbreak at Silverwater in Sydney's west, another remand jail. That prison has particular quarantine facilities, so there seems to be less concern about the outbreak, but there are cases popping up all over the place.
Why is a COVID outbreak more worrying within a prison population? What are the risk factors there?
Some of them are really obvious, right? It's the setting of a prison. You're in close confined space. It's difficult to socially distance. You're indoors. You know, if you do get COVID in there, it's a kind of perfect seeding venue for the virus. But on top of that is the people who make up the prison population. And, you know, people in prison overwhelmingly come from disadvantaged backgrounds with poorer physical and mental health in the general population. I think, you know, more than one in three people in prison are Indigenous or Torres Strait Islander, which means that there are cofactors that can contribute to COVID-19 being more severe in that population. There's just a lot that goes into that population that means that a COVID outbreak among the prison population is particularly worrying, I suppose.
So all of these conditions mean that fast lockdowns can be really, really important in a prison. Do we know much more about how the outbreak is being managed, especially in Park Lee, where the majority of cases are right now?
One of the issues with this outbreak is that initially when COVID-19 started, you had this purpose-built quarantine section at Sydney's other major remand jail at Silverwater. But because of the number of cases that came out of Park Lee, that quickly started to reach capacity. So you had a situation where a number of the positive cases had to be held at Park Lee in maybe less than ideal situations. And one of the issues is we don't know a lot about what's been happening inside Park Lee. So it's one of three privately run jails in the state. And you've had this sort of a restriction, I suppose, on the information that's coming out and that's being shared. What the family members of inmates who are in there say is that they haven't been able to speak to their loved ones, so they don't really know, you know, how the situation's been handled for their loved ones. So there's a real sort of, we don't know everything that we'd maybe want to know.
So I started calling, and that whole day could not get anyone to answer the phone call. So Sunday was horrible. The Monday, I started again at 9 o'clock in the morning. I finally got onto the phone to someone and they said, sorry, we can't give you any information.
Mm. What did you say when they said we can't give you information?
You've got to be kidding yourself. Why can't you tell me that if my husband's sick or not? I think I was crying, to be honest. They were rude.
Mm.
Rude, rude people.
A spokesperson for MTC Broad Spectrum, the private operator of Park Lee, told Guardian Australia that they're unable to provide personal or medical information about an inmate to others for privacy reasons. However, after days of calling, Danny did get some information about Stephen's well-being.
It took probably as a 3 days to get on the phone to someone that actually wanted to talk to me.
What did they tell you?
That his stats were okay, that he's feeling okay, he's okay. Like, it didn't give me any information.
Mm.
And I went, well, can I talk to him? Oh, he's in isolation until he shows a negative reading. And I went, well, how long is that going to be? And she said, I don't know.
Whilst inmate calls to families have resumed across Park Lee, mobile phones are not permitted in New South Wales prisons, which means communication between families and COVID-positive inmates in isolation is difficult. A spokesperson says staff are working on a way to enable COVID-positive inmates to make calls safely, but Danny says that hasn't happened.
I still haven't heard from him. We've missed Father's Day. That was horrible for the children. It's the first time they've ever missed Father's Day, but we just got to come back. He only can bring us when he has a negative result. So I don't know how long that's going to be. Locked in a little area, no support, no I love you. It's just, I can imagine how he's feeling.
Next, why New South Wales prisons are lagging behind in vaccinations. I suppose the big question, Mick, is how many people, both in these prisons and in prisons around Australia, were vaccinated at the time of the outbreak?
That's the question that myself and my colleague Elias Fasonte had asked and wanted to find out the answer to. So the prison population were part of the 1B priority vaccination rollout and the federal government's rollout plan, but we hadn't received any updates or information on just how that was going, you know, how many people, you know, prisoners inside the system had been vaccinated. And for months, both the Public Service Association and non-government agencies like Human Rights Watch have been calling on the government to spread up the vaccination in prisoners and also jail staff because of, you know, fears of an outbreak, but also to be more transparent about just like where the rollout was at, because really no one knew. So when the outbreak first occurred in New South Wales in late August, we started asking the New South Wales government for those figures, or more specifically, the Justice Health Department, which is a part of New South Wales Health. And initially they didn't respond. So in early September, we decided to just individually go to every state and ask them to tell us what the vaccination rate of their prison population was. And, you know, slowly those responses have started to trickle in. So we finally started to get a picture of, okay, what is the vaccination rate of inmates in Australia?
What did that reveal?
I would say a very patchwork approach to vaccinating prisoners, depending on the state. Let's take West Australia, for example, right? In WA, vaccinations began in Bunbury on the 1st of July, and the rollout has been pretty good. As of the end of August, they'd administered more than 7,500 doses. 66% of the prisoners had received their first dose, and about 50% of prisoners in WA were fully vaccinated, which is substantially higher than the rest of the general West Australian population. On the other side of that coin, when we were comparing numbers for the end of August in New South Wales, so just as this outbreak was starting, we found that 21% of inmates were fully vaccinated and 42% had received one dose. That was substantially lower than the New South Wales population at the time, which was, I think, 39% fully vaccinated and 72% had one dose, which is pretty alarming given they are meant to be a priority population.
That does sound very far behind. I mean, you mentioned one other state, WA, there. Was New South Wales kind of worse than most states and territories in terms of that lag in vaccination for the prison population?
Yeah, look, let me like caveat this by saying that all the states have been very frustrating in the way they've released this data, right? So it's hard to compare apples and oranges sometimes. But I think another like really good example is Victoria, where 55% of inmates had received their first dose and 37 were fully vaccinated. Now, that's still not up to the general population, but I would say it's better than what New South Wales is at. So that's probably like the closest comparison that we could come to is those two states, and New South Wales is certainly behind Victoria in its rollout.
So why would prisons in New South Wales, which is Australia's most populous state and one that's been going through an outbreak for quite some time now, be so far behind?
It's an interesting question, and there is no straightforward answer. Our reporting has found one thing that may have been a factor was back at the end of July.
I want to stress there that whilst we haven't been given extra doses of the vaccine from any other government, other states or the federal government, I want to thank in advance regional New South Wales, where we will take some Pfizer vaccines, given the changing health advice around AstraZeneca, and make sure that Year 12 students in those local government areas of concern are provided with that vaccine. We don't want students...
When the New South Wales government diverted some Pfizer doses in an attempt to reopen schools, some of those doses were meant for New South Wales prison inmates. But generally, a lack of access to the Pfizer vaccine seems to have been an impediment to lifting those vaccine numbers. Last week, corrections officials held a briefing for a bunch of different sort of stakeholders in which the Executive Director of Clinical Operations at the Justice Health Department, Wendy Hoey, confirmed what multiple sources had already told me, which is, you know, an almost complete lack of access to Pfizer within the correction system prior to the outbreak in Parkley.
Is it fair to say that lack of access for Pfizer is to blame for the slow rollout? I mean, there is another vaccine, AstraZeneca, that many inmates would be eligible for.
Yeah, the other thing we heard in that briefing last week was Wendy Hoey blaming hesitancy as a big part in why the rollout had been so slow. She said that, you know, the vaccine program started in March and it had been started with gusto, she said, you know, a program of running out AstraZeneca. But she said that one of the main issues they found is hesitancy among the inmate community. I mean, there's a few things to that. I don't doubt that is a factor, as we've seen in the general population. But there's a few things to say. That one is that many of the families that I've spoken to who have family members inside have said that their family members have specifically been asking to be vaccinated and not prioritising Pfizer over AstraZeneca. The other thing to say is that the other states have managed to vaccinate their prison populations much faster than New South Wales, with at least comparable or perhaps less overall Pfizer doses than New South Wales has.
So has the vaccine rollout improved now that there is more urgency to the matter?
Yeah, it definitely has. So since the outbreak, the correction department has received what they've called a massive amount of Pfizer, which they've been now pushing for a target of 2,000 vaccinations a day across the prison population. Wendy Hoey said in this briefing that they've been around to all of the correction centres with vaccines at least once, a majority twice, but the most recent round is the first time they've gone out with a good supply of Pfizer doses. The sped-up rollout means corrections are now targeting, or were targeting, 70% first dose among prisoners by the Sunday just passed, which is a huge increase from the 26.1% figure reported by Justice Health last Monday.
What about the vaccination rate for Parklea, which has the most cases? Do we know where their vaccination rates are at?
No, we don't. And this is one of the most contentious parts of this. The New South Wales Corrections Department is not releasing individual data for the three privately run prisons in New South Wales. We know they hold part of that information. We know they know the dosage amount, so the amount of dosages that the private facilities have. They say they don't know how many actual vaccines have been put in arms, I suppose, and so can't give the information. So then you're dealing with three different private companies who are deciding whether they're going to tell you what their vaccination rates are or not. We know at Parklea that as of last week, about 1,100 vaccines have been administered by St. Vincent's Health, which is running the vaccination program there. They argue that because Parklea is a remand prison, it has a very transient population, which means they can't give a percentage figure on what the rate of vaccination within the prison is, which is an interesting argument because in the Northern Territory, for example, we know that everyone going into prison is offered access to a vaccine. So even if you are dealing with a transient population, you can be vaccinating people as they go in to prison.
Outside of ramping up vaccinations, are there other measures that could ensure the safety of this population?
Yeah. So we've seen the use or the introduction of rapid antigen testing in jails, and that's one step that is positive, I suppose, in a situation where you have a large population in a confined space. I think maybe more systematically, this outbreak has reignited calls from justice advocates for low-risk prisoners to be released early for the end of their sentences. Now, that's something that was flagged really early on in the COVID-19 pandemic, when you initially had fears of an outbreak in the jail system. And the New South Wales government actually passed emergency powers last year that would allow the government to release those low-risk prisoners early, basically. And a lot of people I've spoken to have family members in that situation, coming towards the end of a sentence, for example, or, in a sort of minimum supervision capacity in prisons, have said that they would obviously feel much more comfortable if their loved ones were at home under some kind of, outside supervision order rather than incarcerated.
You mentioned that this power has been around for a while. Do we know if that's been used at all in New South Wales?
A report by the ABC very recently said that no prisoners had been released through its provisions. Now, I think you could charitably say, well, there hasn't actually been an outbreak or a significant outbreak in the prison system until now, right? So maybe there was no need to consider that. But, the power is there if the New South Wales government deems to use it, although Corrections New South Wales have said there are no plans for that to happen at the moment. However, the Deputy Chief Health Officer did seem to suggest that it at least had support from health authorities. She said at a press conference that, the fewer people and the less overcrowding in the prison system would certainly be useful in reducing the risk of transmission.
The New South Wales government has had this power for quite some time to release low-risk prisoners during a pandemic, but they haven't used it. Do you think they should be using it now?
I think they should hang their heads in shame for not using it. What, are they going to wait for somebody to die before they go, oh? It's the same situation as they had in the nursing homes. It's the same situation that's happening in the prisons. It's not fair. They need to wake up.
So, Mick, we know that the New South Wales government has ramped up its efforts, but there's been warnings from advocates, from experts for over a year about this population being vulnerable to outbreaks. And now we have a situation where over 150 inmates at the time of recording are sick and possibly many more to come. Has the New South Wales government failed the prison population here?
Look, you could arguably see this coming without hindsight. I think we've always known that prisons easily spread COVID. It's an environment that's perfect, really, for the virus. You have a large population kept tightly together indoors. For that reason, you know, inmates should have been a priority recipient for these vaccines. But unfortunately, like so many other priority areas, so you know, aged care, disability, the Indigenous population, those areas or those people are the ones that have substantially lagged behind in the rollout. I think the thing is, though, that the New South Wales government didn't need to play catch-up on this, so I think there has been a failure.
If you do get to speak to him, what do you want to say to him?
I love him and that we're okay, and I feel like he's going to be more worried about us and Zach, because he knows what Zach's like, and he'll be awfully worried about his dad and his mum and his daughter.
That was Danny Benson and Guardian reporter Michael McGowan. You can read his reporting and that of the broader Guardian team on the outbreak in prisons at theguardian.com. And we've put some links on the full story page as well. This episode was produced by Ellen Lee Beta and Joe Koning, who also did the sound design. Mixing by Camilla Hannon. The executive producers of Full Story are Gabrielle Jackson, Miles Martignoni and myself, Laura Murphy-Oates. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a rating or a review. Catch you tomorrow.